Hello and welcome to the Scottish Housing News podcast on housing and dementia. With me in the studio is my co-host Kieran Finlay, the editor of the Scottish Housing News. Now in Scotland there are 90,000 people living with dementia, most of them at home. Last year the National Housing and Dementia Forum was formed and got together and worked away and did research and produced a report this year. And we have two of the people who are very much involved with that here with us in the studio. Well, actually, they're on Zoom. And one of them is Leslie Palmer, Chief Architect of the Dementia Services Development Centre at the University of Stirling. And the other is Ashley Campbell, Policy and Practice Manager at CIH Scotland. So, Ashley, can you tell us about the range of organisations that were involved in the National Housing and Dementia Forum and just how it worked? You know, how did you do this exercise?
The National Housing and Dementia Forum was established by the Scottish Government. They invited myself and Leslie to co-chair the National Housing and Dementia Forum. And we spent about a year gathering evidence from a wide range of stakeholders. We spoke to people from the housing sector, from the built environment, from health and social care, from the third sector as well, groups that are working within communities. We had separate sessions for people with lived experience of dementia to make sure that they could get their views across as well. We really wanted to make sure that we spoke to as wide a range of people as possible to make sure that we were covering a wide range of experiences and making sure that we got lived experience embedded within the recommendations as well.
So some of our early priorities of the forum were really to develop an understanding of what housing is available for people with dementia today in Scotland, and to understand the different routes that people are using and the barriers that they have to gain access and advice on housing options and the support which is available to them. We were also really keen to understand the relationship between health, housing and social care, and what are the main causes or the journey that a person may take in later life when changing their accommodation and moving home. And as part of the forum, we were very keen to increase awareness of dementia amongst housing providers and the housing workforce too. So Ash and I used regular blogs to increase awareness of the evidence hearings, but also of the remit of the forum. And we were very keen through that to develop a scope of outcomes which were tenure neutral in their approach, and a series of recommendations that we could make to the Scottish Government, really providing some recommendations for how the Scottish Government support people living with dementia to remain within their communities. And the membership from that really was national, from organisations such as Alzheimer's Scotland, Age Scotland, to some of our registered housing providers, registered social landlords, as well as COSLA and the Scottish Government themselves too. And we also brought in academics who have specialisms within the field of housing and ageing. And we brought in development partners, Royal and Corporation of Architects in Scotland were involved, as well as Architecture and Design Scotland. And we also brought in representatives from National House Builders too, and the housing sector. So quite a varied group of people that we heard evidence from. And as Ashley mentioned, the voices of people with lived experience were really key to this report as well. And we have woven those voices through our recommendations and through the narrative of the evidence that we heard.
And we're going to come back and look at all of that in detail. But Kieran, you had a question.
Yeah, Leslie, I can only imagine the negative effect that COVID and the subsequent lockdowns have had on people suffering from dementia. But what has the research discovered to be some of the biggest impacts brought about by the pandemic?
One of the most concerning pieces of evidence that we saw was the increase in excess deaths of people living with dementia who were in care homes. Some of that has been attributed to the loss of stimulation and social contact that they had with their family and their loved ones, because for a number of months we saw people isolated within their own bedrooms. And so we also saw a similar thing happening within communities where people living with dementia were not able to access facilities, not able to access some of the services that they had relied on. So we have saw that COVID has had a detrimental impact to people living with dementia and a disproportionate impact to people living with dementia as a result of the excess deaths that we saw. It was a really difficult time for everybody. And certainly the Scottish Government recognised that. And part of the National Dementia Housing Forum was really to understand what can we do better in the event that another pandemic happens. What can we do to the infrastructure? What can we do within the housing design? What can we do within our services to be able to support people within the communities?
Ashley, the National Housing and Dementia Forum submitted its report on its findings earlier this year. Can you explain how it went about collecting its evidence?
Yes, the National Housing and Dementia Forum had a steering group of key stakeholders who met four times over the course of about a year to track the evidence that we were collecting, provide a bit of a sense check, and inform us if there was, you know, other things that we should be following up on or any gaps in the evidence. Throughout the year, we held a number of focused evidence sessions, so looking at specific themes around housing and dementia. And to those sessions, we invited a range of experts who we knew had specialist knowledge in that particular field. We gathered evidence through those online workshops. And then in between those sessions, we also went out and spoke to individuals if we found that there were any gaps in our evidence or anything else that we wanted to follow up on. So using that methodology, we gathered evidence on a wide range of different views and experiences and on a wide range of different themes related to housing and dementia. All of those experiences were brought together into the report and recommendations that were submitted to the Scottish Government.
So before we get to the recommendations, can we talk a wee bit about the problem which must be there, otherwise we wouldn't be doing all this work. I read the report last night and I was thinking, I've read this before, over decades. Clearly there's something that we're not getting to grips with. What were the problems in practical terms that the forum unearthed in the housing system that we have now?
One of the first things that we recognised is that despite the evidence being there around the value and importance housing has on people living with dementia and people who are ageing, it isn't adopted. It's not widely adopted. We've, as a sector in terms of the built environment, focused heavily on physical impairment, and we have really lagged behind in understanding how cognitive impairment is impacted by the built environment. So I completely agree with you that we have read this before, but previous reports have had a real focus around housing and ageing. And what this one was doing was recognising that in our national conversations about dementia, housing is important. And so far, our national dementia strategies have never recognised housing as being a key aspect of being able to support people post-diagnostic. What we recognised is that we can discuss housing, we can discuss housing adaptations. I think all of us recognise the importance of being able to make changes to our homes to support us as we get older. But the question that kept coming back was, when was the right time to have those conversations? Because if you have received a diagnosis of dementia, or if you're a partner of somebody who's received a diagnosis of dementia, your entire life is thrown into chaos. You're trying to understand what you're going to be dealing with in the future. You're understanding the legal implications, the employment implications for some people who have that diagnosis. And so when is the right time to actually have a conversation about housing? And is that a priority at that first point in the discussion? And Scotland does provide 1 year post-diagnostic support to anybody who receives a diagnosis. But again, at the moment, those conversations around housing are not forefront in that dialogue, in that discussion. We're really concentrating on where can you get access to support? Where can you get access to legal advice and guidance? And very little around, and is your house going to be able to support you and your partner going forward? So there's a lot of discussion around, is it appropriate to have that conversation when someone's received a diagnosis? Is it something that we should be offering advice, or how should we have a central hub that people can access so that you can wayfind, you can signpost them to this so that you can come back to it when it's needed? But what we do see is there is a tension between receiving the diagnosis and having changes to the home or finding appropriate accommodation to move to. And quite often that move tends to come at a point of crisis. So we're definitely seeing that people, whether it's through their own choice or through it's not having access to or knowing where to go to get guidance on how to have a supportive home environment, those things are not getting implemented across tenures. And so people tend to have a fall at home, are admitted into acute hospital care, and then don't return home because they tend to deteriorate. People with dementia in a hospital deteriorate quite quickly. And so they're discharged into care. By that point, your choices are very limited. So what we were discussing was really, when is the appropriate time? And is it a way we can reduce the stigma of these conversations around housing so that as a nation we're discussing this in the same way we may be discussing, you know, prostate checks in men over the age of 50 or 60? You know, do we all need to have a conversation about our housing so that we can equip ourselves with the right information and make decisions that are informed by our own personal preferences rather than at a point of crisis?
But who is available to provide that kind of advice?
There are a number of organisations through Alzheimer's Scotland provide guidance and support around your home adaptation, design and products and assistive technologies that you can use within your home. I'm somewhat biased because the centre that I work with within the University of Stirling was founded in 1989 solely with a focus around dementia design and care. And we've done a lot around putting resources and creating publications and training for people to be able to understand how to make those changes. But it's a very difficult thing because the discussion around dementia is still stigmatized, and we need to be able to direct people to find the advice when they want to embrace it themselves.
Just a couple of questions further on this. Thinking about the practical things that people with dementia face living in their homes, losing their keys, wandering out of the house and getting lost and not finding their way back. Is there technology which can be brought to bear here? Because it seems to me that we haven't developed the use of technology particularly effectively up to now. So what's out there, what's available that could actually help people with these kind of problems?
There's technology available which is now more increasingly being implemented. The use of GPS, the use of tracking within our own mobile phones to be able to find friends, find family. That technology is there, and quite often it's a technology that's developed, not marketed for aging and dementia, that people are adopting and using themselves. So our iPhones or our Apple AirTags, for example, are now becoming more popular. But I think we have to reframe the question, because our issues were not just about the simple home adaptations. The question is really, where are people living with dementia? Is that housing appropriate? And can they get access to amenities? And is that walkable? Is there local public transport and so on to be able to support them to stay within their communities? So I feel really confident that we're all able to find these solutions through adaptive technologies. But the bigger question is, do we have appropriate housing as we get older? And do we have enough housing options for people as they get older? And that to me is really the underlying issue that we were trying to discuss and unearth. And are our volume house builders building housing which supports ageing, or are we still focusing on the 2.4 children kind of family model?
But Leslie, we have the answer to that. We don't have enough appropriate housing. Just as simple as that.
Yes, we don't. And certainly within social housing, we're seeing, you know, the introduction of EASH2, which is going to put more onus on social housing providers around the EPC rating of a home. And so they can't relet housing after, I think, 2025 with an EPC of D. So what will happen to that housing stock, you know, and what will happen to older people living in those housing stocks? So if anything, it's going to become more acute as an issue for us to consider.
Yeah.
Ashley, back on to the report then. What are these recommendations, and when is it hoped that the Scottish Government will look at them, decide on them, and ultimately implement them?
The report made a whole range of recommendations, and we've already talked a bit about the need for better housing options in the built environment to meet the needs of people with dementia. There's recommendations there about awareness and training for the housing sector. I think what we haven't really picked up on yet, beyond the built environment and technology, is that there's an awful lot to do around awareness raising and training on dementia and what that means, and how it can mean different things for different people. I've learned quite a lot over the last few years working on housing and dementia about the range of different experiences that people with dementia have. I think quite often when you think of somebody with dementia, you think, oh, that's about memory loss, it's about a bit of confusion. But there's actually around 200 different symptoms associated with dementia. So it's not just about memory and confusion. It can be about sight loss. It can be about motor skills. It can be physical symptoms as well as mental symptoms. And I think that we need to be better at recognising the range of different experiences that different people might have and how they need to be met in different ways. So the recommendations talk about awareness and training. They talk about better partnership working between housing and health and social care. Leslie already talked about housing conversations. How do we embed housing needs as a conversation when people are getting their post-diagnostic support? I think that's really important as well. How do we understand the support that people might need if they decide to make a move or get an adaptation? We know beyond dementia that the adaptation system is complicated to navigate. There's not enough funding, that it's difficult if you're in a different tenure. If you've got a social landlord, it's quite obvious who you go to for help. But if you're in the private rented sector, or if you're a homeowner, how do you find recommendations about information, and how we get better access for people? The recommendations have been submitted to the Scottish Government. Our hope now is that in implementing those recommendations and getting them into the National Dementia Strategy, the Scottish Government has just launched a new national discussion on dementia with a view to revising the National Dementia Strategy, which expired in 2020. What we would really like to see is housing being more central to the National Dementia Strategy and making sure that housing is a key part of the conversation around ageing and dementia.
Thanks, Ashley. If that consultation is now live, then we will include a link to it in the notes that accompany this episode. Leslie, the Dementia Services Development Centre created a new tool. Can you talk about the Environment for Ageing and Dementia Design Assessment Tool and its practical uses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's quite a good question to follow on from Ashley's point there about our understanding of symptoms of dementia, because she's absolutely right. Quite often people will assume that it's something to do with memory, but one of the early symptoms is actually wayfinding and loss of wayfinding abilities, and that reduction in cognition. There's a whole raft of issues around visual and visual spatial issues, changes in people's proprioception, so where they place themselves, changes in homeostasis, so how their body responds to heat and temperature, air quality and the impact that that can have on cognition, and even having good sight, but where the disease is processed within the brain, could affect your perception. So there's a whole area around evidence-based design principles that support people living with dementia that are not commonly known, and that's because our understanding of dementia still is that it's a memory issue. So the research that was started in the kind of late 80s, early 90s by our founder, Professor Mary Marshall, focused on how the built environment can support people living with dementia to maintain their independence and their agency, but also there are aspects of the built environment that can really impede people's abilities, and it can impact on things like continence, it can impact on agitation and aggression. Our built environment can even impact on people's sleep patterns too, and we see that within Alzheimer's, where the sleep cycle is somewhat disturbed. So the centre, the DSDC Centre at the University of Stirling in 2019 ran a new research literature review, which was understanding all of the publications within written English that had focused on designing for dementia. And we synthesised that research, and off the back of that, we've created this new Environments for Ageing and Dementia Assessment Tool. And that recognises that one of the highest risk factors of dementia is ageing, and that there are normal age-related impairments that we will all experience, such as changes in our vision, changes in our hearing, changing our mobility and our gait. So the recommendations and the design principles that support dementia are actually really great for just supporting healthy ageing and vitality in older life. So we created this tool, which wasn't solely looking at dementia, but looked at ageing in its entirety, and how can you make changes within different built environments, so be that the pub or the post office or your own home, how can you make those changes to be able to support people to remain active, whether that's socially or economically within their community, if they have a diagnosis of dementia. So there's three tiers to the tool. The first one is an entry level tier one, which is dementia ageing aware. It's free to download. People can use that, and it'll give them six fundamentals to work with to make changes to the environment. And then the second tier is much more detailed, and it focuses on the different types of environments. So we have dementia-friendly swimming pools now, we have dementia-friendly gyms coming through, dementia-friendly restaurants and bars. And this one really takes each of those different environments and breaks down what are the challenges for somebody living with dementia or somebody who's older, and what can you do to support that person so that that environment is enabling rather than disabling. So it's again another tool people can download. They can then self-certify, and they can celebrate the fact that their environment is supportive of ageing and dementia. And I really see this as the kind of the next stage of built environment design changes, like universal design changes, because in the 90s we looked at physical environment and the physical impairments with the Disability Discrimination Act, and we've pretty much cracked that now. It's very rare that you see the kind of the bolt-on ramps. We've worked landscapes, and we've worked really well as designers to create really beautiful responses to that legislation. This tool is about taking that and considering cognitive impairment and cognitive decline as we age. So it's available on our website for people to download and to use. And I really hope that people adopt it, because it will just give people with dementia the chance to go into the communities and use the facilities for the communities with the confidence that the spaces are there to support them.
Can you highlight how any organisations have put these tools into practice? I understand that Kirklees Council in England was the first local authority to adopt the guidance, but Transport for London has also used the tool.
That's correct, yeah. So both those organisations were partners during the development of the tool. It took us 3 years to gather the research and to develop the tool and to have a steering group and stakeholder party involved. Kirklees Council adopted it, and they've implemented it now within public libraries, within post offices and community centres and community hubs. Transport for London have adopted it as part of their sustainable development framework under their ageing vitality. So looking at all of their capital build works, how can you support ageing? In the same way that we've got environments to support young people in play, they're looking at as well environments to support ageing. And so they've adopted this tool as one of the key performance indicators for anybody working as part of their frameworks, any design team member, any architect or engineer designing for Transport for London. Will then be requested to go through our tool and demonstrate that their design supports ageing and dementia. So it's wonderful to have partners like that who take this up. And if anything, it really just demonstrates that these tools can be adopted by different sizes of organisations. And for a long time, I think dementia design was considered to be institutional. It's no longer in the care homes, it's out there, it's in our communities, and it's no longer institutional, it's design. We're seeing some really beautiful, really sexy designs coming through that people are using these principles. And just creating holistic, universally accessible environments too.
Some people might wonder what planning has to do with dementia, but I notice in your report you talk about the National Planning Framework and 20-minute neighbourhoods. How would that be useful to people with dementia? Ashley?
The principles of the 20-minute neighbourhoods are useful for households at every stage of life. It's useful for being connected to your local community, having transport networks, and making sure that people with dementia are able to continue to play a part in their local community. I think getting out and about into the neighbourhood is really important for people maintaining social connections, feeling a part of the community, and not being stuck at home and feeling trapped in their home. We've heard evidence through the National Dementia Forum and through work that CIH have done on housing and dementia about how important it is to maintain those links and maintain people's sense of freedom and independence. We've heard that if people don't have that social and local connection, it can be very detrimental to their health, to their mental health and to their physical well-being as well. Feeling trapped within a home, not being able to get outside and be part of the community is really detrimental. We've heard some quite devastating feedback from people with living with dementia. Possibly a carer who said that their partner was living with dementia, and because they hadn't planned a move, they moved within a crisis and they moved to an area that was unfamiliar, and their partner was no longer able to go out of the house, felt trapped, and they deteriorated quite quickly and ended up in a care home because there wasn't that planned move, because they weren't part of a familiar community. And so I think initiatives like 20-minute neighbourhood are useful for everybody at every stage of life.
And you know, that's a long-term goal by the government to try and bring these 20-minute neighbourhoods into effect. Obviously, a lot of the country hasn't been built that way. So now housing associations, for example, and social housing providers and councils too, have got to think about 20-minute neighbourhoods and think about dementia when they're actually planning the things that they build. Leslie or Ashley, do you want to comment on that?
The 20-minute neighbourhood is a response away from the planning approach of the 1970s, which had a real focus on the car and vehicle infrastructure. 20-minute neighbourhood is now looking at the pedestrian and a human scale for our urban developments as well. The Scottish Government have championed this, and it's great to see it in the MPF4. They have done a lot of work learning from places such as Melbourne, who have brought this in advance of ourselves. And they're adopting that in large-scale developments, so Granton, north of Edinburgh, Collective Architecture, who have developed that master plan, have looked at 20-minute neighbourhood and access to green space, access to public transport meets that recommendation. And we're aware that the Scottish Government have also looked at existing developments and applied the 20-minute neighbourhood, looking at proposed planning applications for large-scale housing developments, and recognised, so using that tool, that developments that were through the planning system or about to go through the planning system were actually going to compound issues such as congestion within small towns and issues around provisions within schools and education. So I think the Scottish Government's work around the 20-minute neighbourhoods is excellent. It will give us that human scale again to our cities. What it means for older people is a much easier ability to access the post office, to access the shops, to access education in later life. And that shouldn't be underestimated, because we saw that communities who had access to that within walkable distances during the pandemic were still able to thrive, were still able to get access to everything that they needed and that was available to them, where those where we have large developments on the fringes of our towns struggled with that. it's also really important that we don't have a situation which has existed where we're building older persons' retirement villages or older persons' care provision on the fringes of our towns, because that in itself is lifting people out of their community and exacerbating the issue of being able to provide access and maintain independence within your own community as well. So the 20-minute neighbourhood looks at diversity within our housing provision, diversity within our community demographic. And the only way you can achieve that is by having a variety of housing options located around that local amenity and that infrastructure. For older people, the 20-minute neighbourhood as a walking distance has to be shrunk because you have to assume a reduction in gate speed. But still, that 20-minute is a really strong principle for older persons' housing and master planning.
Of course.
Leslie just raised a really interesting point there about changing aspirations and what do older people want in housing in the future. I think as a society, we have this idea that when you retire, you move to the countryside, you kind of move out of towns and cities for peace and quiet in the country air maybe, but is that the best thing for you as you're growing older? Or is it better to be part of a thriving town or a thriving community where you've got access to amenities and access to different social opportunities? And I think maybe we need to have a rethink about what housing looks like in the future and what we want to see for ourselves as we're growing older and for older people as well.
I think this is an excellent point, Ashley, because you were right to pick that up, because within our report we made a recommendation that we actually have to get the data, we have to understand what do people want. Very few people have been asked that question. And despite working and ageing, I've yet to meet somebody who considers himself old. You know, I can do a research project with a woman who's 85 and she'll refer to these older people and what they need in the third person and not recognising that at age of 85, the reason we're asking her what does she want is because we would identify her as being old. So nobody recognises himself as being old. And we still have this, I think, very negative approach to discussing housing older people, which to say that older people are holding on to family homes. And I think that's inappropriate because it's their home and why not stay there if that's what we want to do. You know, I'm a woman in my 40s without kids and no one's asking me why I have a 3-bedroom family home and am I holding on to it. And nor would I be happy with that conversation when I'm 85. So what our report identified was that there is still a kind of negative rhetoric around older persons' housing and holding on to homes, and older people should all move into 2 or 1-bedroom apartments. But there has been very little research done on what are the attitudes to housing as we got older, what are the requirements and what do we want from our housing as we got older. And what we're certainly seeing within Scotland is we have a reduced number of housing options. So if we were to compare ourselves to Australia or to America, their housing options for as you age, so over 55, are vast in comparison to ourselves, and the tenures are different and the options in relation to your care and where you would stay. They have, I think, 6 or 7 types of older person housing within Australia you could move into that would all help ageing in place and provide care. Whereas within Scotland, we really only have 2 options, and the third being within a care home. So we haven't got that data. And certainly the conversation was that we are not a homogenous group. We're a heterogeneous group of people. And that doesn't change if we get older. And our housing desires will also be quite varied as we get older, and can we provide suitable housing that allows people to have that option? And it perhaps goes back to the very first point we made, which is we know there is a housing shortage within Scotland, and therefore can we resolve the housing shortage within Scotland and still enable people to have choices as they get older without feeling this stigma of them holding on to their homes because there's a family that needs them, and supporting those homes to be able to be adapted so that they can be changed to allow that family to stay within the community that they've invested in for a number of years.
Well, we did a very interesting podcast on housing with care a few months ago, so I recommend listening to that. Kieran?
Yeah, much of what we've spoken about so far is plans to be developed in the future, but of course housing associations and many other housing providers are doing good work now. Ashley, is there anyone that you would like to highlight as particularly delivering some best practice out there?
Yeah, there's lots of best practice happening across the housing sector, and housing is really key to supporting people to live well with dementia. CIH has done quite a lot of work over the last few years about the role of housing in supporting people with dementia. In 2017, we published some research and a practice guide on the role of housing in supporting people with dementia. And that looked at everything from spotting the early signs of dementia, having conversations with people about dementia, through to dementia-friendly design, adaptations, and looking at dementia-friendly policies and strategies for organisations. In 2019, we followed that up with the publication of the Housing and Dementia Framework. So this is a self-assessment tool that we developed with the housing sector and with people living with dementia. It's a self-assessment tool that allows organisations to look at what they're already doing to support people with dementia or identify where there might be any gaps in their practice and what they might be able to do. And we've had some really good feedback from organisations that have been using the framework. It's a free tool. It's available on our website, so I would recommend that anybody goes and takes a look. It's not prescriptive. It doesn't tell you what you need to do. It gives a range of options and ideas about what might suit your organisation and your community or your residents. And organisations have been using the framework in different ways to suit them. One of the early adopters of the framework, Aberdeen City Council, used the framework to start a discussion about a citywide plan to support people with dementia. They developed a Living Well with Dementia delivery plan, and they used that plan and the framework to have discussions with other stakeholders. And so there's links to the local housing strategy, links with health and social care and post-diagnostic support. And they've got third sector partners involved and local RSLs. So they've been looking at quite a big strategic approach to supporting people with dementia across the city. Feedback that we've had from other providers, so say a small housing association, they might not have the resources to have a full-on dementia strategy or a big plan, but what they've said they used the framework to do is they said, oh, well, we could do some training for our staff and raise awareness. So they've used Dementia Friends, which is a tool through Alzheimer's Scotland. It's free. You can go online and you can do a Dementia Friends course, which is a series of video clips which help you to understand how people with dementia might struggle to cope in different scenarios. So if you're answering the phone to somebody with dementia, if they need help in an office or in a shop, it can help you to understand what you can do to support them a little bit better and understand a little bit better why there might be frustrations or why there might be a lack of understanding. So training for staff is really, really key, I think, to understanding how you can support people with dementia. And it doesn't need to be big changes. Small changes can make a big difference. Another housing association said that they had looked at what dementia-friendly services were available in the community, and they've put notices in their newsletters that are already going out to tenants to say, this is available, it's free, and you can join in. So I think awareness is really, really key. So understanding what you can do, no matter how big or how small. And I think that it's really also important to understand that housing and dementia is not just about specialist providers. It's not just about care homes. If you work in housing, chances are you're going to come into contact with somebody with dementia or a family member or a carer. So understanding what their experience is like can really help to make a big difference to somebody with dementia. So I would stress again that the framework is available online on the CIH website. There's a range of resources available there as well to support you. It's not about doing everything that's set out in the framework. It's about identifying what's practical for you and what might help your tenants. It's free to use, so please do go and have a look. And I think, again, I would stress, it's not about not necessarily about making big changes. It's about finding out what you can do to make a difference to your residents and your community.
What should the politicians be doing now, given that you've done all this work and you've presented it and you've presented recommendations? So what do you want them to do?
We would like them to adopt all of the recommendations at the back of the report, Jimmy. There's a number of recommendations there, and they vary from just understanding and collecting the data that we need around what is the housing offering and provision and where people with dementia living. But also what we would like is to establish a national conversation, a one-stop shop that people who receive a diagnosis of any family members or anybody who's supporting somebody with dementia can go to get access to this information. Ashley was right to say that we need people to have awareness of these issues, to recognise that it can be simple changes to their home. It doesn't have to be a move within the home. And so a one-stop shop that would provide all of this information and advice and guidance that would be free to access at any point in a diagnosis, at any point in someone's journey. Our recommendations also touch on what other organisations can do in terms of RSLs, not just the Scottish Government, but also what the private rental PRS sector could do to be able to support people making adaptations within their homes too. And also looking at what can we do within the built environment sector. So are our building standards appropriate, and do they make recommendations for supportive changes to the housing? And are the Housing for Needs guidelines, which are currently under review, going to adopt certain recommendations around designing for dementia? So there's a number of recommendations there. We've identified different organisations that we feel can support the adoption of these recommendations. But I think the Scottish Government's commitment now to moving this forward, Kevin Stewart's National Dementia Lived Experience Panel and the wider Dementia Stakeholders Dementia Strategy Advisory Group is now happening. And we hope to see the recommendations from this report brought into the next National Dementia Strategy. And that would be phenomenal, because my understanding would be that would be the first National Dementia Strategy that recognises housing anywhere. We haven't saw that in any of the other countries' National Dementia Strategies so far. So we would be leading in Scotland if we were able to adopt recommendations around the built environment and housing design and housing development for ageing.
And Ashley, a quick last question for you. Again, what would you like the politicians to do? But am I right in thinking, are we just talking about adapting or changing or building houses which are specialist, or are we talking about every house that is designed?
It's both. But firstly, I would like to agree with Leslie that getting housing embedded within the National Dementia Strategy would be a massive first step. I think to date, the dementia strategies have been very much focused on the health and social care side of things, and getting housing embedded in that strategy would be a huge step forward, and we hope that the politicians recognise the role of housing in supporting people to live well with dementia. They've already recognised that we want people to be able to live at home or in a homely setting for as long as possible, and you know, housing is key to that, so we need to make sure that housing is embedded within that strategy. Looking at the built environment and houses themselves, I think as Leslie mentioned earlier, if we embed dementia-friendly design within mainstream housing, you know, that's a win for everyone. It doesn't have to be institutionalised. We need to make sure that our houses, the mainstream houses that are being built for the future, so that they can be adapted, so that they can provide a lifetime home and they can change as people's needs change. I think beyond mainstream housing, you mentioned earlier housing with care. There's a case study in the Dementia Forum report looking at Barris Court, which was delivered by Hanover Housing Association. It is an amazing development. It is housing with extra care, which means that people can get more care if they need it, or less care if they don't need it. So it's a housing model that allows people to live in a homely setting within the community, and care can be added if they need it, or taken away if they don't need it. The issue with that model of housing is that a lot of the financial burden for that falls on the housing association. So Hanover Housing Association are taking all the financial risk, and health and social care in the NHS can decide to provide additional services or not, depending on their priority at the time. So we're finding with a lot of these housing developments, NHS might provide short-term contracts for 2 or 3 years, and then if they don't have the funding or if their priority has moved on, they might pull out of that contract, which leaves a lot of the financial risk with the housing association or the social landlord. What we want to see is a much more balanced partnership between housing and health and social care to make sure that this type of development is viable going forward, and to make sure that the funding is there over a longer period of time to create certainty. We went to visit Barris Court with Kevin Stewart, the Minister for Mental Wellbeing and Social Care, as we launched the report. And it is an amazing development with amazing staff. The residents were, you know, thrilled at their housing, and I spoke to one resident who said they wanted more people to be able to live in places like Barris Court, and that can only happen if we have that greater partnership and longer financial certainty. So that would be my message to the government and to politicians, is to invest more in housing and to really recognise the role that housing plays in supporting people to live with dementia.
Well, we'll put links to the report on the website, and of course it's already been covered in the Scottish Housing News. That brings us to the end of the podcast on housing and dementia. And so thank you very much to Leslie Palmer, the Chief Architect of the Dementia Services Development Centre at the University of Stirling. Thanks also to Ashley Campbell, Policy and Practice Manager at CIH Scotland. Thanks very much to Kieran Finlay, the editor of Scottish Housing News, co-host. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks.